money, deals, tribal knowledge, resources, training, coaching, partnering. We are Texas's largest real estate investor association at TexasStarterKit.com. My name is Shanoa Grove. Welcome to the show.
Welcome everybody to the Texas REAs, the largest by far network of real estate investor associations in the great state of Texas, with over 100,000 members, participants, and attendees since 2003. The Texas REAs provides all sorts of resources for Texas real estate investors. We have a huge network. We have power teams and private money. We do market updates. We provide market data. We provide training. We provide resources. We provide money, deals, and just about everything else that real estate investors might want to invest in real estate. And of course, real estate is local, and laws are local, and buyers and sellers are local. So if you want to get plugged in locally, you come to your local real estate investor association. This is the largest network of investor associations by far in the great state of Texas. My name is Phil Grove. I'm one of the co-founders of the Texas REAs. Texas REAs is established in 2003, just celebrated our 20th anniversary of doing this. And we have meetings all over the state, chapters in Austin, Dallas, Houston, San Antonio, and sometimes other cities. But tonight's meeting, we're going to get started by doing a little bit of a market update. We're going to give you a lot of market data and tell you what's going on in the real estate market, which is usually pretty helpful topic. So, you know, what's the big story with real estate? What happened? What's the big change over the last year? What's that? They went up. So interest rates went up. So what do you think now? Let's do a little survey of the audience. I do want some audience participation. Interest rates went up. are interest rates high or low right now? Well, I don't know. Let's do a survey. Who would say that interest rates are high? Raise your hand if you'd say interest rates are high right now. Okay, raise your hand if you'd say interest rates are low right now. Okay, you're not all voting, so what's going on here? Okay, I'll give you a third option. Who would say interest rates are normal right now? Yeah, by far, okay? So in 1981, interest rates on mortgages were 18%. So if you're complaining, okay, about like 7% mortgage, yeah, it's dirt cheap. Yeah, we got somebody who remembers that. Okay, yeah. So, I've been a real estate investor for 20 years. I own about $30 million worth of houses here in Texas. Many of them were bought 20 years ago. And most of the houses in my portfolio have 6.5%, 7% mortgages, right, to this day. A lot of them are getting paid off. But this is normal, folks, normal. Now, a couple of years ago, we had 3% interest rates. Before that, when was the last time we had 3% interest rates? Never in your lifetime, never in your parents' lifetime, never in your grandparents' lifetime. When is the next time we're likely to have 3% interest rates? I would say never. I don't know. I'm not some kind of crystal ball guy, so I'm not here to tell you I know, right? I don't know. But I mean, the odds of ever having 3 or 4% mortgages again, I doubt you will ever see that again. I doubt your children will ever see that. I doubt your children's children will ever see that. And the world and the economics and the things that would have to happen to make that happen, I don't even know if you want to live in that world, okay? So very freakishly abnormal time we just went through. And now we're back in a normal time. That's my perspective, and it's just perspective. Now, if you've just been kind of paying attention to the real estate thing for the last couple of years, you're like, oh, interest rates are high. Well, it's relative, right? Relative to what you know if you only look back for the last few years, right? If you look back 20 years, you'd say it's normal. If you look back 40 years, you'd say it's a bargain. But it's all perspective. It's all perspective. Now, when interest rates go up, what happens to real estate? Does it go up or does it go down? Down. Okay, so who thinks when interest rates go up, real estate prices go down? Who would say that? Okay, who would say when interest rates go up, real estate prices go up? Who would say that? Okay, you know what I would say? It goes up and down. at the same time. There's things pushing up and there's things pushing down. There's things pushing up and there's things pushing down. So I'll give you an interesting chart. This is interest rates versus home, median home price going all the way back to 1975. From 1975 to 1981, interest rates on mortgages got all the way up to 18%. How crazy is that? And when interest rates went up, what happened to home prices? They actually went up. And when interest rates came down, what happened to home prices? They went up some more. And when interest rates went up and down, up and down, and up and down, what happened to home prices? They actually went up. Now, there were some bubbles here. There was a big bubble, right? 2008, big bubble. And there's some little bubbles all through here, too. But yeah, there's not much correlation like you'd think. Now, certainly, higher interest rates make houses less affordable. That's true. And that's a downward force on prices. But there's offsetting upward forces, and that's where people have to really think about it and do the math. So if all you're looking at is like high interest rates, and yeah, prices would go down, but there's so many other factors in it. But I'm going to tell you, and this chart kind of illustrates this, real estate doesn't actually care about interest rates. Real estate cares about two things, supply and demand. That's it. It's the most pure market in the world, supply and demand. In as much as interest rates affect supply and demand, it'll affect home prices. But there's things it does that push up and there's things that push down. It's like real estate doesn't really care about the economy, right? And the Great Depression, real estate prices went down a whopping 6%. Nothing. During the Great Pandemic, another one in a 100-year event, right? Real estate prices went up 30%, right? It wasn't the economy. It wasn't the interest. It was supply and demand. That's what you have to understand when you look at real estate. So like going back to 2002, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, the banks came up with this idea. You know what they called it? They called it subprime lending. Instead of having to have credit, job, income to get a loan, you would walk into a bank, they'd hold a mirror under your nose. If they saw a fog, you got a loan. That was the loan application process. Yeah, stated income loan. You got enough money to pay us back? Oh yeah, I do. Loan approved, right? And 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, lending was easy. Money was just easy. Anybody could get a loan. Everybody could get a loan. And builders built houses in every direction over the horizon as far as the eye can see. What'd they do with all that supply? They sold it to everybody because everybody could get a loan. Man, you could walk into a bank, you could fog a mirror, right? You got a loan, right? So they built bazillions of houses and they sold them all with subprime loans. And then in 2008, what happened? All the banks went bankrupt. Yeah. Turns out it's a really stupid idea to give people that don't have job credit income a loan. That was really dumb. Right, like of all the dumbest ideas, is pretty high up on the chart, right? And lending, boom, came to a stop. It was like a train hitting a wall. Lending just crashed, stopped. So now you had all this supply, billions of houses, zillions, gazillions of houses, right? And then the lending just stopped. So the demand just fell off a cliff. And we have tons of supply and no more demand. What happened to the market? Crash, right? The market crashed. Right, big correction. Now, eventually, you know, the banks all went bankrupt. Now, if you remember, you know, the government actually changed the definition of bankruptcy in 2008, all that mark-to-market stuff. Yeah, they were bankrupt, but they didn't call it bankrupt because they didn't want to call it bankrupt. But they were too big to fail, right? So we bailed them out. And eventually the lenders got back into the lending business. They started doing loans again, right? And it took a few years, but eventually they got back into loans. And all these years later, in the aftermath, today, what do you have to do to get a loan? Turn over your firstborn, right? Fill out a 1,900-page application, right? Submit some blood samples, a lot. You have to do a lot. Money did get cheap, but it never got easy, right? It got cheap, but it never got easy. And because it never got easy again, what happened to building hasn't been keeping up. It's harder to get money. And on a national basis, we are actually in a housing shortage. Did you know that? We have 6 million fewer houses than we have need for houses. And when you have a shortage of supply, what does that do to prices? Pushes them up. That's a push up. So there's something pushing up. Now, why did we raise interest rates? To battle what? Inflation, inflation. And you know, I got to tell you, when I hear about the word inflation, it's always used in negative terms. Inflation is bad. We have to fight inflation, evil inflation. I personally see things differently. Personally, I love inflation. I love it. I really do. I just have another name for it. I call it appreciation. Yeah, because when all of your wealth is in real estate, then you go to bed at night hoping for more appreciation, inflation, appreciation, right? My portfolio took off like crazy with all that appreciation. So I'm pretty happy with the appreciation. But because of all the appreciation, and when you have appreciation, what does that do to the prices? Goes up, right? So there's another thing pushing up. But then to curtail that, we raise interest rates. And interest rates, when they go up, houses are less affordable than they used to be. So that means fewer people can afford them. And that means there's less demand. And that pushes prices down. So we have things pushing prices up, and then we have other forces pushing prices down. And that's the point. When people look at interest rates, oh, less affordable, that's just pushing down. Well, that's just one of the effects. There's things pushing up and there's things pushing down. And that's why when you look at interest rates versus home prices going back, you know, to the 70s, you can see there's not as much correlation or much correlation that you might think. And by the way, while I'm giving this market update, I do want to preface all of this. We do not have some sort of an agenda here. If you go to the National Board of Realtors and you ask them what's going to happen to real estate prices, what are they going to tell you? They're going to go up. Every year, no matter what's going on, it's going to go up. It's always going to go up. We have nothing to sell. We're not offering any investments. If it's going to go down, or if we think it's going to go down, we're going to tell you we think it's going to go down. We have strategies to make money in up markets, down markets. It's a sideways market. So we don't have an agenda to try to convince you of a certain perspective. We're just going to give you the data. We'll show you the things pushing up and things pushing down, let you make your own judgment based on the data. And we'll give you a forecast, but I'll just preface it by, like, we really don't have some kind of an agenda. You know, we predicted the market was going to go down in years that the market went down. And we said, in a down market, here's what you want to do about it. And you can make money in up markets and down markets. Sometimes it's easy to buy and hard to sell. Sometimes it's easy to sell and hard to buy. It's never easy to buy and easy to sell. But I will say this. I personally prefer to invest in a normal market than an abnormal market. It's like a few years ago, I hated multifamily. And the reason I hated multifamily, a commercial asset, is because things were hyper-competitive, which means people were paying top dollar, and they were making deals work that only worked because you get 3% mortgages. And so they could get cash flow and 3% mortgages, and the numbers all worked. But here's the thing about commercial loans. Commercial loans are not 30-year loans. Commercial loans tend to be like 5-year loans, right? These properties are constantly turning over. And you know, Wayne Gretzky, what's his famous quote? I don't skate to where the puck is, I skate to where the puck is going. So when you buy a commercial investment or invest in a commercial investment, you have to ask yourself, where's it going? Because in 5 years, I got to sell this thing or refinance this thing, and what's that going to look like? And if you're investing in a once in a million year 3% mortgage rate, and is it reasonable to expect that you're going to be getting a 3% mortgage in 5 years? I would say that was not a reasonable bet. Right, and so now all these properties are being sold or refinanced or whatever, and guess what? There ain't no 3% mortgages, and you can't borrow as much, right, as you used to. You can't do an 80% loan. Maybe you can do a 70% loan. Maybe you can only do a 65 or a 60% loan, and you have to pay more interest, right, for the same amount of income, and the loan is approved based on how much income you're generating. So which means you can borrow a lot less. Which means the big word in multifamily is cash call. What is a cash call? It means all the people bought those multifamily properties 3 or 4 years ago, right? Now they have to refinance them. And when they refinance them, they can't borrow as much as before. So they have to ask all their investors to put more cash in, to invest more in the same deal, which really sucks. Now, today, when you're buying a multifamily or any other commercial asset, you get a 7% loan. And the question you should ask yourself is, do you think it's reasonable that in 5 years you'll be able to get a 7% loan or better? I would say that's a pretty good bet. I would bet that we'll be able to get 7% or less loans in 5 years. I don't think it's going to be 3%. But it might be 5.5%. I don't really know, right? But I think that's a pretty good bet. So I like betting on things that are normal instead of betting in an abnormal market, because I think normal is just more normal, more predictable. So where are we? Got things pushing the market up. We've got other forces pushing the market down. And when you put all that in a blender and you see what the answer is, where's the market? The market is flat. That's what happened. It went up, it went up, it went up some more, and then it flattened out. And that's where it's been for the last year and a half, flat. Now, I will say, and I'm going to give you a bunch of details and a bunch of data, I will say something has happened in the last 3 months, one quarter, and it's something we haven't seen for a year, but just in the last quarter, prices are starting to come up, and inventory is starting to drop, and all the indicators are starting to switch. So we don't know for sure, but it looks like we hit bottom. It wasn't much of a bottom, and now things are moving on. So Texas last year, let me put the screen full screen, the prices were flat. Year over year, 23-22, flat. Now the volume is down. What does that mean? There's fewer buyers and there's fewer sellers. So there's less real estate being bought and sold, but the prices haven't changed. They just went flat. They went up, and then flat. The mix has changed. Let's talk about the mix. Historically, traditionally, two-thirds of the houses that get sold are resale houses, and one-third of the houses that are sold are new construction. That's the typical mix. Right now, it's inverted. Right now, it's two-thirds new construction, one-third resale. Why? Because everybody that owns a house probably bought it or got it refinanced over the last 3 or 4 years, and they got one of those 3% mortgages, okay? And they don't want to give it up. So everybody that normally should be, would be, could be selling their house to buy a bigger, nicer house or whatever, nobody wants to sell. All right, let's just stay here. If we sell, we're going to get a 7% mortgage. I want to keep my 3% mortgage, so nobody's selling. So we have a constriction of supply. And because nobody wants to resell their house, what's happening? We got not enough inventory, all right, and that pushes prices up. So that's another thing pushing prices up, not enough supply. Now the builders are making up the void because people are still moving here and having babies. People need a place to live. So they're buying more new builds. So the builders are filling the void, right, with new construction. But there's a problem there too, right? Because money is getting harder and more expensive to get, which means building is slowing down. So eventually the builders are gonna run out of stuff to sell. And when the sellers don't wanna sell and when the builders don't have anything to sell, what do you got? You got some big pushing up things on the prices. So that's another thing that can push the prices up. So we got things pushing up and we got things pushing down. Now, if you look at just this year, it's early into the year, but just this year, everything started to turn around over the last 3 months. Prices are up a little, not a lot, a little. And the sales volume for the first time in almost a year and a half has actually finally turned. Sales volume is actually up, which is the big surprise. Now, we'll go into some more detail, starting with a Texas roundup. The average price house in the state of Texas, $404,000, up 3.5% compared to a year ago. 334 is the median price home, up also 3% compared to a year ago. Now, in my opinion, the most important number of the chart to look at is this number right here, months of inventory. If you really want to know where things are going and where things are, months of inventory. What is months of inventory? Well, the best way to explain months of inventory would be this. If you just took all the houses that are in the MLS for sale and you wouldn't add any more houses for sale, so we're going to just take whatever's for sale, we're going to sell that, but we're not adding any more, how long would it last? How long would it last? And the answer is 3.6 months. We have 3.6 months of inventory, which is also the average amount of time it takes to sell a house. Some more, some less. Average is 3.6, which also makes sense. Now, let me put that in perspective. They say if there's less than 6 months of inventory, you have a seller's market. If there's more than 6 months of inventory, you have a buyer's market. If there's right around 6 months of inventory, you have a neutral market. What kind of a market are we in? We're in a seller's market, and it's actually a pretty strong seller's market. Now, perspective. Everybody's like, the market has gone down. Compared to a year ago, yes, you're right. Because a year ago, we had 2.6 months of inventory, which was an incredibly strong seller's market. Now we have what I would describe as a strong seller's market. But it's all perspective, right? Some people are like, oh, everything's slowed down. Well, yeah, compared to a year ago, it has. Compared to what's normal, it's hot. And that's just perspective. Now, active listings are up a little bit. That's why there's more inventory. But closed sales, now this is the thing that just switched. Closed sales is actually up. It was going down, 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 and it just started to come up. So something is going on. And by the way, the inventory a few months ago was over four months of inventory, and starting to drop. So the inventory is dropping, closed sales is going up. Something is seemingly changing now. Will it continue? Who knows? We'll talk about all the market drivers, but we would expect that it probably will. So whatever you were thinking about, like wait until the market bottoms out, you probably missed it by a couple months, but not by much. Okay, 2021, what happened? Prices in Texas went up 18% in 1 year, and they went up in 2020 too. In 2022, it went up another 10.7%, 2023, flat. So it went up, went up, went up, and then it just flattened out. And it's flattened out for, depending on which city you're in, between 12 and 18 months. Just boom, 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 boom. Flat, 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 right? Volume's down. As I said, the volume's down. The number of buyers, number of sellers down, right? But prices just flatten out. And then just in the last quarter, started to come up. Diving into some of the cities, Houston, second most affordable city, major city in Texas. Prices up 4%, 400,000 is the average price. Median price, 330, up 3%. Months of inventory, 3.4 months, pretty good market. Closed sales is up, pending sales is up. So that's really the first time you have seen both of those numbers up. What happened over the last 3 years? In 2020, one, prices went up 16%, 2022 up another 10%, 2023, flat, flat, flat. Leases, on the multifamily side, leases are up a little bit, 0.5. Lease prices up a little bit too, 2.5%. Now, a lot of this has to do with just multifamily inventory coming on the market, but even that's doing pretty well. Dallas, let's talk about Dallas. The average price house in Dallas, $485,000, up 3%. Median price house in Dallas, $394,000, up also 2%. Months of inventory, 3 months of inventory. So something's going on in Dallas, and I'll tell you something about Dallas. I don't know why this is, but we've been tracking this for 20 years, and for some reason, Dallas has always been the bellwether of Texas. I don't understand why, but it's always the first one to go up, the first one to go down. It's always the leading indicator. I don't know why. There's some mix of the economy or something in Dallas, and Dallas was the first one to start ticking up before the other markets started to tick up. Inventory dropped, 3 months of inventory, so it's a pretty hot market in Dallas. Leases are up, lease prices are up, closed sales flat, but pending sales is up, active listings up. So something's going on in Dallas. And there are certain things like Dallas that are things we always look at, kind of as like leading indicators. Another great leading indicator, inventory. Another great leading indicator, condominium inventory. Okay, that's like the best. Condominiums, we always call condominiums the canary in the coal mine. What does that mean? It's the first thing to go. When the market starts to soften, first thing to go down is condos. When the market comes back, the last thing to come back is condos. So if condos are hot, you know everything's hot. You can sell a condo, you can sell anything. So it's the very first leading indicator. So like, I guess Dallas condominium inventory would probably be their most leading of leading indicators. Going back in Dallas, 2021, hot year, went up 20% in 1 year. 2022 went up another 15% in 1 year. 2023, flat. flat, up 1%, which I would say is flat. Now, Austin, let's talk about Austin. Austin is an outlier, and there's a reason. I'm going to explain the reason that Austin's an outlier. The average price house, though, in Austin, $553,000, average price house. That's not a typo. We did a little research, like, where did the word Austin even come from? It turns out Austin is Latin for San Francisco. Yeah. Elon Musk set up shop in Austin. Samsung, Meta, Apple, Amazon, and they brought in all their high-tech, you know, multi-hundred thousand employee, dollar employees, and things just went crazy in Austin. I know. I'm actually in Austin, so I know. And prices are up, but just in the last quarter, up 3%. Median price home in Austin, 440, up 1%. Months of inventory. This has been dropping. Austin had almost 4 months. Now it's down to 3.2. Pending sales is up, and closed sales is up. So Austin is definitely on the move. And this is the first time it's been on the move since its correction. So let's talk about the outlier. 2021 was the outlier. In 2021 in Austin, Texas, prices went up in 1 year, 29% in 1 year. 29%. The inventory in Austin, Texas in 2021 was 0.4 months of inventory. That's less than 2 weeks of inventory. It was insane. And what was happening in 2021 is somebody put a house for sale. They'd get 11 offers in the weekend, 11. One of them won, 10 of them lost. So the 10 that lost would put an offer on another house. They got 11 offers in a weekend. One of them would win, 10 of them would lose. And after this would happen over and over again, the buyers would start screaming at their realtors. What's wrong with you? You're giving me bad advice. I need to buy a house. You keep telling me to bid the wrong amount and I keep getting outbid. What do you have to do to buy a house? And I'll tell you what you had to do to buy a house. In 2021 in Austin, Texas, it was normal. This is an abnormal thing that became normal for people to buy a house at 5 to 10% above appraised value. That was normal. That's not normal, but in 2021, that became normal. Do you know the bank will not allow you to buy a house above the appraised value? They will only loan you, right? The down payment plus the loan cannot exceed the appraised value. That's all they'll give you. If you want to buy it for even more than the bank says it's worth, you have to bring extra money on top of the down payment, on top of all the bank's money to do that. And in 2021, that was happening normally in Austin. 2022, it didn't get much better because prices went up another 10%. And then 2023, down 8%. So Dallas went up 30 and flattened out. Austin went up 40 and came down 10 and flattened out. What's the difference? If you bought a house 3 years ago in Austin or Dallas, it's the same thing. Now, if you bought a house 1 year ago and it went down 10%, then you'd be like, oh, the market's down. If you bought a house 3 years ago, you'd say the market's up. And it's up exactly the same amount it is in the other cities. But that's just perspective. That's just perspective. Now, it went flat, 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 flat. And then just over the last quarter, something seems to be changing. For the first time in 18 months, prices are going up. Inventory is falling. And active sales and closed sales are both up. And that is a big change from what we saw before. So something is seemingly changed there pretty significant. San Antonio. Now, San Antonio, I don't know why, has always been the lagging indicator in Texas. It's always the last one to move. I don't know why. I said Dallas is the first one to move. San Antonio is the last one to move. I have no idea why. But the average price house in San Antonio, 349, down 3%. It's still correcting a little bit. Median price, 295, down 3%. Inventory is the highest of the four major cities, 4.3, but it's still a pretty good market. Closed sales is up, right? So this is up, but pending sales is down. So there's kind of a mixed bag here. 2021, San Antonio was up 16%, 2022 up another 12%, 2023 flat, technically down 2%. but that's San Antonio. So what's going to happen next? Well, I don't know. Let's give you some data. There's things pushing the market up and there's things pushing the market down, right? Interest rate is just one of many things that pushes the market. So let's talk about the market drivers, starting with the economy. Now, real estate doesn't really care that much about the economy, interestingly enough. It really cares about supply and demand. However, when people feel like the economy is doing pretty well, they're more likely to buy a house. So that's a soft upward push, and Texas especially is doing really quite well. Consumer confidence. It's interesting, it's measured on a 0 to 200 scale. I don't know why, but anything over 100 means people believe the economy is growing. Anything under 100, people believe that the economy is contracting. And right now the score is 115. So it's pretty solid. We're not thinking we're in a recession. We don't seem to be feeling like we're going into a recession. When people don't believe they're going into a recession, they're more likely to buy a house. So that's something that pushes things up. Unemployment, another one. People don't have a job, they can't buy a house. The unemployment rate is solid. Below 5%, anything below 5% is considered good. U.S. Is 3.7. Most of the cities in Texas are in line with that. So unemployment is pretty good. Job growth, there's another big one. You know, when the economy is growing and the jobs are growing, people are more likely to buy houses, so that pushes up the demand. U.S. is growing at 1.7, Texas is growing at 2.7, so that's a good one. Stock market, now, real estate really doesn't care about the stock market, except for this. When the stock market goes up, when people's 401ks go up, they feel wealthier. Even if they haven't realized the wealth, they feel wealthier. And when people feel wealthier, they're much more likely to buy real estate or to move up, to buy a bigger, nicer piece of real estate. So that's how it affects real estate. It increases the demand. So we got another one pushing things up. And then we got interest rates. Interest rates are higher, much higher than they were before. And because they're higher, mortgages are a lot less affordable. And because they're a lot less affordable, fewer people can buy a house, right? So that has constricted the demand, and that's pushing prices down. Home price trajectory is flat. So I'm going to put that as neutral. It's not going up, it's not going down, it's been flat. You know, it's started to just start to tick up a little bit, but we're going to still call it flat. Closed sales trajectory, this is starting to turn. But in most of the cities, it's still been kind of down. It's starting to turn for the first time in a year, year and a half. But in most cases, it's been down. Pending sales trajectory. Pending sales is starting to go up. And obviously, pending sales precedes closed sales, right? So when pending sales goes up, eventually closed sales goes up. So there's definitely some movement there. Active listings are going up. We're putting some more inventory on the market, but it's just barely keeping up with the demand. So we're going to call that a neutral. Months of inventory, I gave you that before. Anything less than 6 months of inventory is considered a seller's market, and that's an up push. Housing permits trajectory. This is, are we building enough houses for all the people moving here and having babies, needing a place to live? We are building more inventory. We're building more houses, but we're barely keeping up with demand. In migration, now this is actually a really big one. Migration is the ratio of people moving in to a city or state versus out. Okay, because when more people move in than out, when the population grows, you have growing demand. Everybody needs to live somewhere, an apartment building, a house or something, right? So growing demand is something that pushes prices up very heavily. So probably this is one of the biggest important things on this chart here. And Texas has huge in-migration. I think California has a program. They pay people to move to Texas. Is that how it works? I don't know how it works. It's something. During the last census, California lost 500,000 people. Texas gained 500,000 people. Where do you think they went? It's like pretty obvious, right? Everybody's moving to Texas. Greatest economy, greatest people, greatest weather, greatest everything, right? It's a beautiful thing. And because of that, everybody's moving here and people keep having babies here. And that means we have a lot more people that need a place to live. And that's pushing up the demand, which is another push up on the prices. Construction. Now, this is interesting. Construction labor growth. We have a problem. Contractors are dying. Right? The average general contractor is like 58 years old. It used to be like 56. Now they're 58. Nobody's becoming a contractor. Right? It's starting to change a little bit. But I mean, if you got a kid, don't send them to college. Give them a hammer. Okay. I mean, they're going to make a lot more money. No student debt. They're going to be in a much better life. I mean, just give them a hammer. I mean, seriously. You know, it's like this story, this surgeon had a toilet backing up, so he had to hire a plumber, right, to come fix his toilet. The plumber fixes the toilet, gives the surgeon a bill. The surgeon looks at the bill. Oh, my God, these are like surgeon prices. And the plumber says, yeah, I used to be a surgeon. You know, it's like. I'm telling you, I've been building houses for 20 years. Used to be you could build a house for like $120 a foot. And now you're lucky if you could build a house for like $300 a foot. I mean, it's crazy, right? $200-$300 a foot is just like normal now, right? And it didn't used to be like that, but it costs a fortune. It's all labor. It's all, I mean, construction costs have gone up a little too, but most of it is all labor. So, and that's a problem. So that's keeping the demand down, and you know, it's getting more expensive to be able to build new houses. So that's another thing that's gonna be an issue. And then there's like wild cards, you know, interest rates. Are interest rates gonna go down? You know, the Federal Reserve says, yeah, we're probably gonna lower interest rates, but you know, we're kind of taking a look at the inflation thing. That doesn't seem to be correcting. So maybe it won't go down or won't go down much. We don't really know. There's an election thing going on this year. Will that affect the market? I don't know. Got some wars going on. So, you know, there's always some wild cards. But when you put all this together, you got things going up and you got things going down. And I would say this one is changing. So that red's about to become a yellow and then probably a green. And that leaves one thing, interest rates. So there's a lot of upward push on the market. There ain't much downward push on the market. And what's gonna happen? I don't know. So let's do a survey of the audience. Who thinks house prices are probably gonna go up? Who thinks house prices are probably gonna go down? Okay. Who doesn't know? We don't know. But I'll give you a forecast. We believe the market bottomed over the last quarter, and we expect interest rates will probably start to decline a little bit. The Fed says 0.75 points by the end of the year. Maybe less, we don't know. Because of this, we expect sales volume to increase by 5% and prices to be up 5% this year. That's our forecast. And I will say, we've been doing a forecast for 20 years, and our forecasts are pretty remarkably accurate. And I'm not like saying we're geniuses. We don't know. You know, the data, by the way, is pulled from Texas A&M School of Real Estate. All this data is online. We're not making any of this stuff up ourselves or figuring this out ourselves. We're just pulling data out from a lot of different sources. We also post our data on our Facebook and Instagram page, so you're welcome to have it as well. But I will say this, my observation going back 20 years, and I don't do the forecast. I'm the reporter of the forecast. I didn't actually create the forecast. But I will say, real estate is not that hard to predict. The stock market, in my opinion, is impossible to predict. It's all speculation. The economy is pretty darn difficult to predict. Real estate, not that hard. And the reason is because it's all supply and demand. And we know almost everything about the supply and the demand. We know how many people we have. We know how many houses we have. We know how many people are having babies. We know how many people are moving here. We know how many people are dying. We know how many houses we're building. We know how many houses we need. We know how much we're going to have, and we know how much we're going to need. Right? I mean, we know everything, right? There's not much we don't know. There's a few little variables, right? We don't know exactly what's going to happen with interest rates. But there's a lot of things that are known, right? And that's why I would argue that predicting real estate is not as complicated as predicting a lot of other things. there's always been the latest, greatest, coolest thing. Okay, metal construction, container construction, modular homes. There's always some new home thing that's going to change everything. And I don't know, but it's never worked. And the reason it's never worked is because, like, these container ships, it's like, oh, you can get like these containers and just bolt them together. And first of all, they're ugly as all hell, right? Nobody wants an ugly house. But the problem is whenever you do something different, like a printed home, and I'm an engineer, so I know some of this stuff, right? Literally, you're making these concrete walls by printing the home. Okay, what do you do when you run wires, right? Now, you hire an electrician or a handyman. They take their little saw, they cut a little hole, they run the walls through the sheetrock. It's really simple. Everybody knows how to do that. Then you got a concrete home, and you say, I want to run wire, right? The guy shows up with his little saw, and he sticks it in the hole, and it breaks, right? It's like, oh, you need special people to do this. Like container homes, you need welders to do this, right? These modular homes, you need cranes to do that, right? You need special trades that have special skills with special tools, with special training. And that's why it never works, right? And I don't want to sound negative, right? I mean, it's like maybe someday it'll be a big thing and we'll at some point, like EV cars, right? I mean, it's happening. Right, but it's not happening maybe as fast as everybody thought it was going to happen, and there's reasons for that because there's other forces saying no, we don't really necessarily want that. So I don't have a lot. I would never want to be a pioneer. Like, let somebody else pioneer. I'm going to be a late adopter, not an early adopter when it comes to any kind of home technology. Because every time I've seen somebody try to be a pioneer, most of the pioneers end up dead. Right, and it's like greenhouses. What a disaster. Right, 5-star energy efficient homes, total disaster. And I know people have built them. And you know, people want greenhouses, don't get me wrong, okay? But it costs like 20% more to buy a 5-star energy home. So you're gonna spend 20% more to build it. When you go to sell it, people love 5-star energy efficient homes, but they don't love it 20% love it. They'll pay 10% premium. So it costs 20% more to build, and then you go to sell it, you get a 10% premium. There's a math problem. So that's why most of the people that did it tried it and they figured out this was not a good economic decision to do this. And there's a lot of things like that when somebody comes up with some new ideas. It often looks good, sounds good. People say it's going to change the world and usually it doesn't, especially in homes. Because it's just so much entrenched labor and processes, and like you go to Home Depot, there ain't concrete printing stuff for homes. You know, maybe someday there will be. I mean, you know, but it's going to take some time, and a lot of people are probably going to lose a lot of money figuring it out. Yeah, beats the heck out of me. Yeah, I don't know. You know, I know a lot about real estate. I don't know anything about Bitcoin. I actually know a little bit about Bitcoin, but I mean, I'm not a Bitcoin investor, speculator, you know, and I don't have a problem with Bitcoin. It's just not my thing. I invest in stuff I understand. If you offer me some investment that's not real estate, I'm probably going to say no, just because I don't understand. And it could be the greatest thing in the world, right? And I've turned down great opportunities. And I've turned down dumb opportunities. And overall, I got plenty of good opportunities and stuff I do know. So, but I don't know. But I do think blockchain could change how title is done in real estate. So there will be some of the technologies in Bitcoin that I think will revolutionize aspects of real estate. Like title insurance at some point will be managed on blockchain, which should dramatically reduce its cost. I think it's just a lot easier to predict. Like the stock market, like if all the analysts say Apple computer is going to go up 10% next year, and next year Apple revenue goes up 9%. What happens to the stock? Crashes, right? Now Apple had a great year, went up 9%, and the market and the stock crashes because in the stock market, you know, the price goes up and down based on how the performance is compared to how much it was guessed or predicted to be, right? So you're speculating as a speculator. So to make money in the stock market, you have to out-expert the experts, and the experts are really smart. I mean, they spend all day figuring this stuff out, you know. So real estate's not that complicated. No, it was so freaking obvious, right? You ever see the movie The Big Short? Anybody paying attention would have said duh, right? And it was a duh, right? It was like it's supply and demand. We had incredible supply of money. We built an incredible supply of houses, And then when the subprime lending thing stopped, because stupid ideas don't last forever, right? When the lending stopped, right, the demand stopped, you had too much supply, no demand, market crashed. Yeah, I mean, I think that was like the most obvious thing ever, right? And yeah, there was no big surprise to everybody that, you know, eventually stated income loans was not gonna work, right? So, and it didn't, you know, and it was like, duh. So, yeah. Any other questions? Yeah, maybe. There is some things with deed fraud, and that would also be helped by blockchain and NFTs, and yeah, so there's some technology that might be helpful in there. Question, how will it affect real estate?
Yeah.
I don't know, like, I would imagine, yeah, I mean, if people have more money because their debt was forgiven, then they could probably take on other debt, which might be maybe more likely to buy a house. I really haven't ever heard of that. I mean, but that makes sense that if they got their student loan forgiven, they might feel like they could take on more housing debt. So that sounds like it could happen. I know, you know, some loans are being forgiven, but then others are not. So, but I don't know. I would tend to doubt that would be a big enough thing to have a significant impact on the real estate market, but I don't know. All right. So we're going to move into our next presentation. I have a special announcement. We interrupt this program for a special announcement. So yeah, we provide a lot of resources to real estate investors, including market data, including training. And so speaking of training, I'll mention some training. We do training. Texas RIAs and Flipping.com sponsor the Flipping Real Estate Workshop for Texas. Practical, actionable, detailed, step-by-step training. We teach all 12 real estate investing strategies that are used here in Texas. We teach all 65 marketing campaigns. We teach all of the closes. Closes are the scripts, the words you say when you're negotiating. We teach how to partner on deals, which is a great way to get started, how to access funding for your deals, experiential learning. The reason I mention this is because we have some workshops coming up in just the next few weeks in Austin, Dallas, and Houston. We are live and in person, or you can attend online via Zoom, or you can do a hybrid of live and online because they're both at the same time, obviously. The reason I mention this is it's coming up quickly and it's also being offered for free. So normally we charge, but we have a little promotion going where we're doing this for free. There are out-of-state companies that do these types of workshops. They typically charge $1,000 or more. And I'm going to tell you, this is going to be much better because this is Texans teaching Texans how to invest in Texas using the strategies that work in Texas. There are things that are legal in Texas you cannot do in 49 other states. And there are things you can do in 49 states that you cannot do in Texas. And those are really, really important things to know, and that's the kind of stuff we talk about at the Texas Real Estate Investing Workshop.
Texas's largest real estate investor association at texasstarterkit.com. If you like today's episode, please subscribe, comment, share with other investors, or join us directly at texasstarterkit.com.